Well, good morning. You're with Margaret O'Connor on this gloomy Tuesday morning. It's the 9th of July, 2024, and I'm sitting opposite the Garden Guru. Good morning, Ned.
Good morning, Margaret. Great to be here as usual.
Oh, it's such a thrill to see you rolling into the car park in your low-line black sports car. Ned's going to talk this morning about all things decorative in the garden. Ned, what's your favourite climber for winter?
Undoubtedly, it's a clematis, a winter flowering clematis. I absolutely adore it. So it's called Clematis norpalensis.
Norpalensis.
N-A-U-P-A-L-E-N-S-I-S.
Right.
It's pretty rare, hard to find, but it's one of my greatest joys.
So if people get fixated on some of your recommendations today, which, you know, it's easy to do, what's the best thing to do? Place an order or do something like that?
Place an order in a nursery. We've got some great large nurseries with access to a lot of thousands and thousands of plants.
Mm.
We can beg and borrow from someone who actually has one.
Mm.
They throw out seedlings, so sometimes I have some to give away, and also they're easy, very easy to grow from cuttings.
Oh, really, really? Mm. Well, tell us about norpalensis.
Well, let's say I was in the garden for the first time since forever because it wasn't raining.
Mm, mm.
And I sat underneath my very broad and beautiful norpalensis.
Yeah.
So at the moment, probably it's about 4 metres high, 4 metres wide.
Yeah, wow.
And I've chased it up an old fig tree.
Uh-huh.
So that gives the framework for it, you know, right. Go through the branches and entwine and climb.
Oh, beautiful. So that's a great idea if you've got – it's a living fig, is it?
Yeah, a fruiting fig, yep.
Yeah.
And the great beauty of it is the fig is deciduous, so dormant in winter.
Mm-hmm.
So then the clematis can go through it and do its great job.
Mm.
And then as the clematis is finishing, the fig then comes into leaf and then later into fruit. So it's a cycle.
Wow. That's
so this clematis really just turns the seasons on its head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's deciduous in spring, summer and autumn.
Right.
And throwing out its beautiful loveliness in winter.
Oh, okay. And that's one of the joys, I think, of gardening in winter up in this climate, is that you can find, you can sort of drop in these gorgeous winter flowering plants.
Mm. And they seem quite rare, and so they're even more beautiful in winter. There's not much to sing about. Why this norpalensis is so beautiful, and mine hasn't started to flower yet, but it'll be totally smothered in the smallest, pendulous, bell-shaped flowers.
Mm.
And then when they finish, then they're replaced with these beautiful puffy, smoked little balls, which are the seed heads.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not sure which one's more beautiful.
Oh, really? So, and what colour are the flowers?
They're a cream white with a pinky purple centre.
Oh, sound beautiful.
Throat, yep.
Where's it from as a plant? Where do?
Well, I always spelt it in my head norpalensis, so I thought it was from Nepal.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I was writing a blog a couple of months ago, I discovered it's N-A-P-A-U-L. So I'm unsure. Not that much information available. So anyway, when it's flowering, it's like a starry, starry night.
Oh,
it's just
beautiful.
Stunning.
Yeah.
Especially when the overcast days, they just illuminate the whole space.
Because, the light quality, the hues in flowers actually come out a bit more, don't they, in this sort of dull light. But we've had these dull, cloudy days for so long now.
Very much, yep. Pinks and reds and those things sort of get lost.
Yeah.
But the white ones sort of ping and sing.
Yeah, yeah.
They're much more noticeable.
And just in terms of their cultivation, do clematis, are they hungry for water, or are they water-loving plants or drought?
Well, you never want to let them dry out. Mm. But this norpalensis I planted maybe 10 years ago at the base of a fig tree, which I said, and I watered it when I planted, and I've never done anything to it since.
Wow. Mm.
So I think it's because in summer when it's really hot, the fig leaves give it shade on the ground.
Right.
And then all the fig leaves, when they fall down in winter, creates this beautiful mulch. And then the birds are up there playing and eating the figs as well, so you get an awful lot of bird droppings.
Mm.
So it just continues. I've never done anything to it, never mulched, never fertilised and never watered it.
And have you done anything fancy? Sometimes they say with clematis you should, or well, some people call them clematis, but then others say, oh, no, it's probably clematis is the correct pronunciation. But some people talk about sort of putting rocks over the roots and things like that.
Clematis generally need a really cool root run. Mm. And their roots are actually quite near the surface. So that's why they need to be cool.
Right.
Very important. So you need to put mulch. You can put rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Those two are very good. The problem with rocks is the plant going to get enough water? That's what I'm always a bit afraid of. So I absolutely adore it. And then we get to probably the larger flowering ones, Clematis jackmannii.
Oh, yes, I've heard of that one. Yep.
So this is a very, very broad broad varieties of clematis. Now, jackmannii had the large flowers, and they're generally between each flower, generally the size between 12 centimetres up to 20 centimetres, which can be absolutely huge. Mm.
And are they white?
Every colour in the
Oh, so it's a group.
Yep.
Right.
So you get white ones, you get purple ones, you get ones with beautiful stripes down the petals. You get ones which are doubles.
Mm.
Ones with this ornate centre. The breeding which has gone over the last 30 years have created these amazing things.
So clematis is that category of flower that sort of has its devotees, I imagine, in breeding, you know, extravaganza sort of attempts. Yeah, is that it? Am I right with that? Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
So they're quite readily available at nurseries.
The jackmannii. They're pretty stunning, aren't they?
Oh, look, stellar.
And they flower. They're going to give you a winter display or a spring?
They're doing a mid spring display. Now they're very slow growing, and in the first couple of years, you really got to give them love. A lot of fertiliser, a lot of pelletised seaweed and fish, a little bit of blood and bone, but a good mulch to keep the soil's roots cool and well watered.
Mm.
Now, I have had a lot of trouble with the large one, the jackmannii.
Mm-hmm.
Probably due to poor attention to them in their first year. Once after that, you're fine. They'll go.
Mm, it's like a lot of plants. They really, well, I mean, you don't, I once had a very good gardener say to me, you wouldn't leave a baby out in your backyard without clothes on or a blanket, would you?
And then food for a couple of weeks and a lot of water, yep.
She said, so why on earth people expect plants to survive their first year, or small, I think it was small native trees at the time, you know, in our climate. And I thought, absolutely. It's a bit different to the coast where you just jump, throw your babies in the beach with no clothes.
And there you go. A lot of people do that with roses or hedging plants, so it's a bit awful. So as I said, I've had a bit of trouble growing in the past, and my garden is sort of littered with stakes and these snail bitten labels hang around like tombstones.
Oh, of failed attempts.
Yep. Like one whole big cemetery. But if I give them attention, they're easy to grow.
Right.
One great tip is to, when you're digging a hole, plant 2 to 3 together.
Right.
In one hole. Then they'll end up growing together, and so you'll have this three flowered gem of a climber. Absolutely stunning. So you'd pick a white one, a purple one, a pink one. Say.
But you'd really have to diarise the attention to that, because that's going to take three times the fertiliser, and would that be right? Or?
No, not that much, as long as you prepare that hole and apply the fertiliser. Just the hole has to be a little bit bigger.
Right, okay.
And that can look wonderful.
Mm.
There's also an earlier flowering one which is very popular, is the Montana.
Oh, I've heard, yes.
Yeah, and that originally came in a small, the flowers are quite small, and they come in a white, an alba, and they also come in a soft pink. And in recent years, we have lots of new cultivars, which are different shades of pink, slightly larger, slightly smaller. But these are just simple to grow. If you kill one of these, just give up gardening.
If you can't. I think I may have killed one. But never mind. Might not have been a Montana. It might have been one of the more delicate Jackmanii.
And another trick then.
But if you're going for your basic and you just want to, you know, start easy, a Montana might be the way to go.
That's the one to go.
Yeah, sure.
You can also have a Montana and put that in a hole with two or three other large flowering clematis. Now, the large flowering clematis aren't cheap.
No.
They only cost $20 to $30, $35 each, so you really are going to look after them. And they're in one spot, it's easier as well. Anyway, the Montana is far more vigorous. You know, it can reach the top of a trellis or a pergola in a year.
Right.
So if you had that Montana and then you place it with a couple more Jackmanii's, as the Montana grows up, it's creating the framework for the smaller leaf ones to go up.
Yep. And will they climb up the Jackmanii's sort of?
Up the Montana.
So the Jackmanii will use the Montana as their trellis.
That's correct.
Yeah, correct.
And then something also special about that, I'm not sure if I have it the right way around, but the Montana will start flowering and it'll go for about 5-6 weeks.
Yep.
Cross fingers. And then the last 2 weeks of the Montana, the Jackmanii come in.
Okay.
So you have overlaps.
So you'll have that beautiful dual flowering, but at the same time you'll also have that continuation.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm. Yep. Fantastic.
Yep. Love it to bits. And then, my big goal in life is, is to have a clematis flowering every season of the year.
Oh, this is your gardener's challenge.
Yes. So I've got the winter. Mm-hmm. I've got the double happening in spring with the Jackmanii and the Montana.
Right. And now the Nepalensis is your winter one.
That's the winter one.
Right, okay. Yep. So when do we expect the Nepalensis to flower? Is it too late to plant a Nepalensis
now? I was sitting underneath thinking, why aren't you flowering already?
All right.
But it's been so cold and miserable. Yeah. Everything's stationary in the garden. Nothing's growing. Veggies are stagnant.
Yeah.
All the violas and things like that are just sulking, saying, don't like this.
Before I turned on the broadcast, I had a little chat. I said, is this dull weather good for gardening? And you said, no, not really.
Well, can I say for myself, I hate it. I'm outside every day. It's just horrendous. Overcast, windy, drizzling with rain.
Bit of a wind chill factor.
Yeah. We don't have any customers at the nursery. Is it good for the garden?
Tune it up.
No.
Go in there. We won't say where, but you need to just get out there and persevere.
So is it good for the garden?
Mm.
No.
Mm.
There's no sun, as I said, there's windy, blah, blah, blah. Yep. And I planted out a new bed of delphiniums yesterday, which I've been collecting over about 2 weeks because it was just such horrible weather I didn't want to go into the garden. As I dug down maybe 3-4 inches, what's that, 6 centimetres, 7 centimetres?
Yep.
The soil was just dry.
So it's really not penetrating.
No,
it's interesting. Mm. Yeah.
But we're supposed to be getting good rain today and tomorrow. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, we want that penetration, don't we? We want that saturation.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway, getting back to the clematis, now I'm going to start
the big challenge.
Yeah, investigating the Vitticelli variety.
Oh, okay.
And I don't really know that much about it. I know there's one called Freckles, which flowers beautifully in autumn.
Oh.
And there is an evergreen one called Amandi, Amadii, I think. And that's an evergreen one. I think that goes in summer, but further research is going to happen.
Mm.
Must be happening for me.
Mm. Mm. So, you'll be able to fill us in on those as time goes by. But, you could have a clematis growing all year round, but you wouldn't have them in the same location, would you?
Generally not.
No.
The Montana and the Jackmanii can be in the same place.
Right. Okay. So they would make a great, and then you could do multiples of the other ones like Nepalensis, or multiples of Montana, the summer and autumn. We're looking at Amandi and Vitticelli, and that's to be continued.
Yeah, very much to be continued. Like I've still got a few years left to me.
Terrific. Oh, you're very young, Ned. So, Ned, clematis apart, any other recommendations for winter, you know, something to brighten our spirits in at a time like this?
Well, there are the great hellebores,
which
I adore.
Now, some people call hellebores in the Northern Hemisphere Christmas roses, don't they, or winter roses?
Or lentil roses, yeah, well, because in England that's when they flower. But yeah. Here we call them winter roses.
Right.
Instead of Christmas roses in the Northern Hemisphere. The
Christmas roses, that's right. But they're not roses at all. They're a little, what do you call them? Herbaceous? And they're perennial. Yeah.
When they're naturalised in a garden, there are a couple of big gardens which I've worked in over the years. They just create beautiful magic carpet.
They do, don't they?
It's just stunning.
And they love shade and... Of course, you know, if anybody doesn't know hellebore, they're gorgeous flowers, so modest. They face the ground. They sort of droop a little bit.
That's correct, yeah.
But the idea is that you pick them and float them in a bowl and then their loveliness.
Yeah, I do multiple bowls in winter of them, yep.
Yeah, and we talked about this before, that those winter, so many of these beautiful winter flowers can be brought inside in some way and kind of just lighten the atmosphere in the home at a time when it's pretty gloomy.
Yep. So these days there are possibly millions of varieties and cultivars of hellebores. And they come in whites and purples and slates and cream and nearly green, and then they have freckles in the centre, and now they have more ornate foliage. So they can be quite...
They're a gorgeous restrained colour palette, aren't they? Like if you're a designer looking for colours to paint a wall or something, or make a beautiful restrained sort of set of dresses or something, you'd more than likely choose some of those gorgeous hellebore colours, wouldn't you?
Now, you said before about shade. Mm-hmm. Well, they do best when they're naturalised under deciduous trees.
Mm.
So when the foliage has fallen, then they're getting full sun in the winter.
Right. Oh, so they do need that winter sun.
Yeah, but then they hate... the summer heat, so that's when they're protected by the canopy of deciduous trees.
So under a deciduous tree would be ideal. I've seen them there. I've seen them in a big old property in this region, just as far as the eye can see. Mm. But under deciduous trees that were planted probably by the very first settlers. And then there's, I don't know, decades of these hellebores just going nuts. Absolutely exquisite.
Yeah, like an intricately woven carpet.
Persian just carpet. Like yep. Absolutely gorgeous, yeah.
And generally you don't have to look after them at all. There's no maintenance. With the exception, if you really want to see the flowers well, you cut back the foliage about now.
Is that right? Okay.
Because after a year, the foliage is, after the heat and snails, etc., they're looking pretty ratty and tatty, so...
And
get rid of those.
If you're starting them off and you're not worried about snail bait affecting your dogs or whatever, would you put snail bait around brand new hellebores for to establish?
Oh, the best thing to get rid of snails is just beer. Great excuse to go to the bottle shop.
I've done that work, yeah.
In very, very shallow lipped sources. And when at least as they're going out... Out in life, at least they're drunk and having a good time.
Right, so you don't, and of course that won't poison your dogs. It might make them a little tipsy, but it won't poison them.
No. Well,
after the beer?
No.
Oh, no.
Well, I had that alcoholic cat from next door, do you remember?
No, I don't.
Well, on my days off, I treat myself to a large cup with a bit of spice rum, milk and... touch of sugar to take the tartness away.
All right.
And this cat from next door, who I just call Cat.
Yeah.
No other name. Wherever I put that cup, he will find it, no matter how high up, and he'll just drink and drink and drink, and then he lies on his back. And he went, come on, let me, scratch me, I'm having a good time.
Oh.
And this cat, he's turned into an alcoholic. I've told the owner,
Yeah.
But anyway, and sometimes you see him sort of staggering down the path, the cement path. Yeah.
Whereas Fionnette is just a little bit of a pick me up, so to help you, you know, continue with your labours in the garden.
Too right. Yeah.
Well, my daughter rang me up the other day, really indignant. She said she just bought a muffin, and she was about to eat it, and a kookaburra swooped.
Really?
This is down in the city, and took the whole lot. She said that was the muffin that didn't ever get to her lips. Yeah. Sorry, I can see you've got something else to say there, Ned.
No, I'm just trying to work it well today. So the hellebores are absolutely fantastic. There are a lot available in the nurseries at the moment. Again, they're quite expensive.
Yeah.
But they're new hybrids.
Mm.
And if you don't have a place where you can naturalise them in a large, broad area,
mm-hmm.
just a couple through the garden is good. I put them under large shrubs and on the east of them, east of a large shrub. So it's getting morning sun
right.
and it'll get shade in the summer.
That's right. So it's shade in the summer is important, but a little bit of sunlight to fuel the whole...
the growth of the plant.
Growth, yeah. Fantastic.
Yep.
Wonderful.
Mm.
Well, so we've got no excuse not to have colour next year because we're going to take your advice this year, Ned, and get those climate. We're going to. We have no excuse not to have colour in our gardens in winter this time next year.
There's one more plant I could talk about: is the Iberis or Candy Tuft.
Oh yes,
I love it to bits.
Mm-hmm.
The most pure virginal white you could ever imagine. It's clear and bright, beautiful.
Is that got a shape like a carnation?
Similar, yeah. It's one flower will have many, many florets in between.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I might have the wrong one, yeah, but Candy Tuft.
And there are a very, very small shrub.
Uh-huh.
They're classed as a cottage garden plant.
Uh-huh.
And in winter, they'll again just make the ground look like a starry, starry night or the Milky Way. And once a year, you can just give them a tight prune, even just with a pair of scissors.
Right.
And have the perfect Miss Muffet's tuffet of greenery.
Beautiful.
It's a rich, small greeny foliage. And so if you do that, if you had the room, and I wished I did, but I don't, I'd love to have about eight in a row and about three, four deep, about 24 plants together, and you have rhythmic mounds.
All right.
And they look delightful. And again, if you kill that one, the Iberis Candy Tuft, just give up. Give up gardening.
And I think sourcing that is either in a small sort of potted colour pot plant, is it, or by seed? How would you start that off?
Yep. Now, you can buy them what they call cottage garden plants in a small pot.
Right.
The smallest pot you can get for about $4.50.
Mm.
You can get larger specimens from different companies in nurseries, and they're about $12 a pop. You can also buy them in tube stock, $3.75, $3.65.
Okay, so that's the...
So it's very, very easy to cultivate.
Iberis,
and then the common name is Candy Tuft.
Iberis.
I mean, it's called Iberis because it originally came from the Iberian Peninsula, which now is Spain, I think.
Mm.
Spain and Portugal. So that's where it first came from.
And they're pretty tough, and they thicken up, and create a great. I'm still haven't recovered from 45 Heritage David Austin roses wafting perfume.
I've been going around all the nurseries trying to get my absolute favourites yet again.
Thank you so much, Ned. Is there any other winter colour you want to talk about today?
No, but I'd like to just jump back to hellebores.
Yeah.
Because why you get these huge expanses of them under trees or carpets is that they self-seed readily.
Right.
So it all depends on what the bee's done from jumping from one to another, what the new ones are going to be.
Mm.
Interestingly, the hellebore seeds are only useful before they dry out of about 2 days.
Is that right?
Any further, you can't keep in an envelope or in a jar for another year.
Ah, that's a really useful thing to know. No point in collecting hellebore seeds.
That's correct. So you can get those seeds when the cone of the flower, this dried part, and you can shake it and you can hear the seeds going backwards and forwards.
Get them in the ground.
That's when you just throw them on the ground. You don't have to get them in the ground.
Yeah.
The other thing is if you want to make it...
So just a surface scatter.
Yeah, that would naturally would be happening.
Yep, right.
Another thing is they're probably the easiest plants to cultivate, not to cultivate, to hybridise. to make new varieties.
That's right. They're very, very prone to that, aren't they?
So if you can get, if you can pick two different ones in your garden, say a beautiful shaped one, and then another one which has a beautiful colouring, and if you put little marks on each plant, a bit of string or tapes, you know which is which, and then with a paintbrush, you can go from one and to the other.
Oh, okay.
And then the one to the other, which would be the mother plant, which would be the flower, not the shape or colour, and you mark that, then hopefully that's a brand new one.
Wow.
And then you can name it after yourself, sell it for millions around the world, and retire early.
That's right.
And your name is immortalised in a great hellebore plant.
That's right.
And your legacy will continue forever.
And then you can just concoct little sort of tots of rum and spice and live happily ever after gardening.
With the alcoholic cat,
Yeah, fabulous. Oh, thank you so much, Ned.
Thank you, young
Good
Margaret.
Gardening. I can see the sun just kind of springing to life behind your head in the, out the window in the studio. So it could turn out to be a beautiful day. You never know.
We hope
For me, it'll just
I
be a washing day.
Gardening. I need to do some gardening. Bugger the washing if the garden's got to happen.
Oh, thank you. Look, today is, or yesterday, we're in the middle of NAIDOC week, so, Ned, you've chosen one of your favourites, Garamal. We're going to go out this one is Weathel. This is one of Garamal's.
Why I picked this fellow is my great dog would never react to any song at all.
No musical sensibilities until
this one. And any song by this fella, my dog would just go, it would just sing and sing and sing and sing and sing in total delight.
That is so, because to me, Garamal is in another realm of Garamal. Jeffrey Yunupingu, as some of my listeners would know, is one of my favourite Aboriginal artists, but a Nongu artist. And I mean, look, the translation for this song is I'm going to tell you because I really hope you enjoy it. It's going to go for 5 minutes, but it's all in language. But what Garamal is writing about is his country. It's not a narrative song like we're used to, I suppose. This is two scrub fowl crying out, looking for Guwalinya. The calls like women crying, looking for Murrunawu. Excuse me, my pronunciation. The cries returning to his mind to the jungles at Mutmujinya. And your dog understood and cried out as well.
Well, I'm not sure he understood the words so much, but he did have a very large vocabulary.
Well, we had a wonderful service, a NAIDOC service at my church on Sunday, and we had visiting Aboriginal singer from Tinga, and I'll tell you, he sang a song for us and it went straight to my heart, and maybe that's where the magic is. But anyway, I'm going to talk more about NAIDOC week as we go along, but I hope you enjoy this music, and it's Ned's choice.
Thank you, Margaret.